This call is being recorded.
Hello, everyone. This is Renee Rentmeester. I'm the creator and executive producer of the Cooking Without Looking TV show and podcast. And today, we have someone who I met only a couple of weeks ago, but I feel like I've known her all of my life. Her name is Charlene Borkus. I met you at the National Federation of the Blind at Tampa conference a couple of weeks ago. How's it going, Charlene?
Oh, it's going wonderful. Thank you for asking me to be on.
Sure. I figured it'd be great. And you had a great story. I will call you a rogue princess, but we'll learn more about that later. Tell us a little bit about your life.
Well, I'm legally blind. I was born with hypoplasia of the optic nerve, which means the optic nerve is too short. So it affects, you know, what I see. I also have some light sensitivity and some color blindness. I'm a teacher of students with special needs. I'm currently teaching high school students with intellectual disabilities, 9th and 10th graders. And this is my fourth year at high school. Before that, I taught elementary varying exceptionalities and students with behavior disorders, grades 3 through 5. I'm adventurous. I live in Florida. I hate talking about myself.
I know. I'm like that too. I understand.
Yeah. Like, what do you say?
Well, you know, you're doing pretty well right now. It must be interesting because you've got a visual impairment and then you're teaching these kids with, you know, some extra special needs. How is that going for you? I know the other day when we were talking, it sounded like you were doing really, really well with that.
You know, I love what I do. I kind of fell into teaching. I had a job with AAA and it was kind of stressful. I know it doesn't sound that way, but, you know, what I had done was really stressful. And a friend of mine, that I rode with, horses, she was the art teacher at one of the schools here locally. And she said, they're looking for a teacher's aide for, fourth grade early prevention dropout, and you'd be perfect because the school, Orange Ridge Bullock, and they had, that's kind of an interesting story, but the school was very inclusive before inclusion was a thing. And so I went for the interview with my guide dog, and I got the job. And working with these kids, I really related to their struggles, because a lot of these kids had 504s or IEPs, and learning was really difficult for them. And I just really connected with them because school was so hard for me because I couldn't see. And it was, you know, it was always a struggle to, I couldn't read the textbooks. And if I did get large print textbooks, they came mid-year.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So, I hated school. And it was always a struggle. So that relation, I was able to relate with their struggles, and they could see that I was struggling or that I would come up with strategies to be able to see something to do my job. And so there was that connection. And so now as a teacher, I'm constantly thinking outside the box or trying to. And, you know, the textbook scenario of, well, this is what you do when you have a student with this learning disability. It, just because it's in a textbook doesn't mean it's going to apply to 100% across the board. And so just finding strategies to get them to focus or get them to engage in their own learning and advocate, and teaching them to advocate for themselves at an early age. It was,
it sounds like you're the perfect.
Yeah. The relationship building is, I'm like, the relationship building is really easy because they see me struggle and I have accommodations in my classroom, with with the lighting, and the kids love the lighting. I have track lighting with multicolor lights and floor lamps. So we're not using the fluorescent lights because that hurts my eyes.
Right.
Yeah. So like a lot of kids that have sensory issues, they love coming into my classroom because it's settled. You know, they're settled. It doesn't interfere with their learning. And so if a student needs more light, they sit closer to one of the lamps, or we direct the light onto their desk. And so they see me living through the strategies, and it makes it easier for them to accept those strategies that I'm teaching them and actually use them.
You know, some of the things you're saying, like I was just thinking back when you were talking about the fluorescent lights, and they always seem so bright, and I don't have, you know, anything with my vision or anything, but they did always seem so bright, and to the point of being distracting. And I think the track lights that you're talking about sound like they're like calming. Maybe all kids should have that.
I am a firm believer that fluorescent lights make a difference in the distractibility, especially with kids that have, you know, sensory issues. And at the time when I switched from the fluorescent lights to the track lighting, I was teaching students that were emotionally and behaviorally disturbed. And we noticed a calmness that happened in the classroom when we used those lights versus the fluorescent lights.
Yeah, that seems like an aha moment, because, you know, those things are so bright.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the flicker that really affects me. So if I'm looking at a paper or one of the other things I do in my classroom is I don't always use white paper. I use different colored paper pastels, and that makes a difference because, you know, that white paper is very hard and harsh on my eyes. And also, you know, I color coordinate math is on this color, and reading is on this color, or I color coordinate groups. So because I teach multiple grades, so that helps me with organization as well, color coding things. And the flicker from those fluorescent lights happens on the paper.
Yeah.
And it triggers migraines for me sometimes. And
wow.
That's why I.
Now, did you have to talk like the powers that be into doing these things differently, or were they sort of on board with you?
I had an amazing principal who was so supportive of anything that I needed to accommodate my classroom. I have to say, you know, transitioning from the business world into the education world, the accommodations, when I need an accommodation to do my job, I am so supported. And that doesn't always happen in the real world.
No. It seems like you're like the perfect teacher for them, because if they were to have someone who like had the 20/20 eyesight and always got the A's in school, you know, it seems like they probably wouldn't be able to relate.
Yeah. Well, you know, everyone has, there is nobody that, as far as I can see, nobody has perfect. We all have something that is a challenge to us. It may not
right.
be physical, but we all have our challenges and things that we have to work at.
Exactly. Now, speaking of challenges, the thing that caught me when I spoke with you was your pierogi story. And I want to call you the princess of pierogies. It was so funny. And as a person who my grandmother used to make pierogies, it really hit me. So let's hear your pierogi story for everyone.
Well, since you are familiar, you know how much work goes into making pierogies. And my mom was 74, and you asked her what she wanted for Christmas, and she, you know, oh, I don't need anything, you know how moms can be. And I was
right.
trying to think of something to make her. So I'm sitting on the couch one morning watching the Food Network, and I think it was Tyler Florence he made this pierogi recipe. I'm like, oh, that's what I'm going to make my mom for Christmas. It's so perfect, right?
The perfect pierogies.
Never have made pierogies in my life. So I pull the recipe up and I'm reading it. And I'm like, oh, this is going to work. So I didn't have a stand mixer. And so I borrowed my best friend Pam's stand mixer, not having any reference to ever making anything with a dough before in my life. And it called for like 13 cups of flour, which should have been a clue
to
me. Well, yeah, it should have been my first clue that maybe you're taking on more than you should.
It's so, a pierogi army.
I know. Oh my gosh. So I made the stuffing the night before. I did the mushrooms and sauerkraut stuffing and the potato stuffing because I like the sauerkraut and mushroom, and my family likes the potato and cheese. So I did that the night before. So I started at 7 o'clock in the morning. It was Christmas break. I'm a teacher. And I'm like, I can get this done in a day. That was my second mistake. So, excuse me. So I'm following the recipe, and all of a sudden the blender or the mixer starts making this noise because it's struggling. And I'm like, uh-oh, I can't break Pam's mixer. She needs this for Christmas dinner. So I pull the dough out, and I'm kneading it, and I'm doing everything that I need to. And, oh, there was so much dough. So I started rolling it out, and...
You were rolling in dough.
Oh, my gosh. I was rolling in dough. A couple hours later, I'm like, this is going to be longer than I thought. Maybe I should pour a glass of wine. That was at 9 o'clock in the morning. And so, and I'm stressing. And so by the time I was married at the time, my ex-husband came home, I'm crying. My kitchen is just like a scene out of I Love Lucy. And literally there's flour everywhere. I'm crying. I'm like, I'm never going to finish this. And I'm there's dough in my hair. There's flour on the floor. There's it was crazy. And I only made half of it at that point. And it was 8 o'clock at night.
Oh, my God. How many pierogies did you get out of half of it?
Well, just that half, I think I made 6 dozen. And I don't even think it was half, to be honest, because I just I called my friend's husband, who was a pastry chef, and I said, can I freeze this, can I do this like in a couple weeks? He's like, sure. I ended up able to make enough pierogies to give my ex-husband's family, my brother, my mom, friends, they all got like 2 or 3 dozen pierogies. And I still had like 4 or 5 dozen for my family.
Well, do you want to, you and I talk pierogi pretty fluently, but do you want to describe what a pierogi is for our non-pierogi familiar audience?
Well, it is a Polish ravioli. That's the best way I can describe it. And you can put anything you want in it, actually. Traditionally, it's potatoes and cheese or meat or kapusta, which is sauerkraut, mushroom, onion mixture. But you can also do like blueberry pierogies, apple pierogies.
Oh.
I read cookbooks for fun. When I get a new cookbook, I like to read like the history of the food. And it's traditionally a peasant food.
Sure.
Yeah.
As with most popular foods that we have now, tacos were peasant foods. You know, French onion soup was a peasant food. Pretty much everything.
Yeah, so the history of food is always interesting to me. But so it's basically, it looks like a little taco that's sealed. It's a half circle, and you stuff it with whatever you want inside. And then you boil it. And then we like... if it's the potatoes and the sour cream or the kapusta, butter and onions and then you fry it.
And, oh yeah.
And you serve it with sour cream or applesauce. And then I always use homemade applesauce if I serve it.
Oh yeah, they are just like heaven on earth. And I was wondering, the family must have been shaking in their boots the next Christmas to see if they were getting more pierogies.
Oh, I was not going to do that again. we did make that exact recipe for my mom's 75th birthday with, you know, the kibasa and the kawumpkis. And I enlisted the help of my brother and a couple of cousins. So we had a production line. But it is definitely not a project you want to do by yourself. So I always have helpers when I do it now. And I have I found a smaller dough recipe. I think
it's my not 13 my, cups.
Yeah, and I think it comes. I think the website that I got it from was my grandma's favorite Polish recipes. I could be wrong, but it's a much easier dough, and I think it's a smaller dough, and it's actually closer to what my grandma and my aunts used to make.
Well, now we know why the women were all in the kitchen all day making pierogies.
Right, it was an assembly line. And now we know why they drank a lot of wine.
There you go. It was just an excuse to drink the wine, Sean.
Exactly.
Well, so tell us about your recipe. It's going to be a Monday's recipe of the day. We'll have it on our www.cookingwithoutlookingtv.wordpress.com website. Tell us about your chicken pot pie.
Well, my chicken pot pie is one of my favorite recipes that I like to make for family and friends. It's just one of those comfort foods, you know, and it doesn't matter if it's warm or cold outside. It's just a great comfort food. And it's actually a compilation of, I like to take a bunch of recipes. I don't know how you are, but when I find a recipe, I'm like, oh, I like this, but you know, I think it'd be better if I did this. So, it's just something that I've kind of combined with the crust recipe, a couple different pie crust recipes. And I have to give out a shout out to my cousin, Suzanne. She's in our family, the pie lady. And she told me about using vodka in the crust instead of ice water.
Does it make taste different?
Yeah, I tried it. I tried it because, you know, that dough recipe makes two discs, and I like to have the bottom crust and the top crust. It just adds to the comfort.
Right.
And so I made one batch of pies, or one pie crust with the ice water and the other one with the vodka instead of the ice water. And it came out crispier and flakier.
Oh, that's interesting. Do you use the same amount of vodka as you use for the water?
Yeah, yes. But I did find that if you use the vodka, you do need a little bit more than the half a cup. not for the purposes here. But no, it seems it just needs a little bit more. So I usually just add a few drops at a time to get the dough moist enough. And then, and then the filling is again, a compilation of different filling recipes from different cookbooks and different chicken pot pie fillings that I've tried.
Oh, well, that's great. So what do you use like a soup in there, or
I usually like to use chicken stock and whole milk seems to make the best to make, you know, up to the 12 ounces and the 4 ounces. And then I make a roux. I saute the onions, and I like to use fresh carrots and celery because I do like a little bit of a crunch with the vegetables. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I saute all that with the butter and the onions and the garlic until I feel that the onions are soft, or I see that they're soft. And then I sprinkle the flour, and I cook it down, make sure everything's coated really nicely. And then you gradually add the milk and chicken stock, stirring until it thickens. I salt and pepper it. And then you add the chicken and the rosemary, thyme, and I like fennel seed in there. It just kind of gives it a little.
Yeah.
And it just gives it a little bit of a different flavor. And I stir that and let it thicken a little bit on a low heat for about 10 minutes. And then just before I get ready to pour it into the actual pie crusts, I add the frozen vegetables so it doesn't get too watery. And I make sure my frozen vegetables are thawed. And I like corn and green beans and peas. Sometimes I put mushrooms in there as well.
Yeah,
I'll use fresh mushrooms, but I put that in when I'm sauteing the onions and celery and garlic. And then I just stir it and pour it into the pie crusts, put the top of my pie on, and make sure you make a heat release. Don't forget to slice the – I did that once. It's not pretty. And yeah, and then I bake it. And I don't like to use an egg wash on these particular pies. I just put them in, and anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes until I feel or see that the crust is nice and crispy, and then I let it set for about 10 minutes before I eat it.
Oh, wow, that sounds great. That sounds wonderful. Well, Char, if someone wants to reach out to you for your recipe or your prowess with pierogies, how do they reach out to you?
Well, my email address is charlenebrush@yahoo.com, and it's all lowercase. And Charlene is spelled Charlene, and brush like a hairbrush. And I'm also on Facebook as Charlene Borkus.
B-O-R-K-U-S.
Yes, B-O-R-K-U-S.
Well, Charlene, thank you so much for being with us today. We've really enjoyed it. And thank you for helping us change the way we see blindness. I'm Renee Rentmeester. If you want to reach out to us, we're at www.cookingwithoutlookingtv.wordpress.com. And have a wonderful day, Charlene. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much. And it was such a pleasure meeting you. I love your show.
Aw, thank you. Thank you so much. That means a lot to us. Have a great day.
You as well. Thank you.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.